Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hours Editorial Review. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hours Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio, and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Editorial Review and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events in the light of Bible prophecy, biblical law, and scriptural history. So stay tuned for tonight's special report right after this message. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the other swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can order yours by calling direct, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website? It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and request that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, there's a cult running the country, or so says Joseph Wilson. In July of 2003, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson revealed to a New York Times piece, or in a New York Times piece, that President Bush's assertion that Saddam Hussein was seeking to acquire uranium from the African nation of Niger was false and should have been known by the Bush administration to be false. Wilson was in a position to know. He, Wilson, had been sent by the CIA, acting at the behest of Vice President Dick Cheney, to Niger to investigate those claims, which he reported were baseless. And then, coming on top of other reports that the Bush White House had cherry-picked intelligence to make a distorted case for the war in Iraq, Wilson's piece caused major political damage to the Bush administration. It reacted by attempting to discredit and then punish Wilson. So on July 14, 2003, a syndicated columnist by the name of Robert Novak dutifully revealed that Wilson's wife was an undercover CIA operative, writing that, quote, two senior administration officials told me Wilson's wife suggested sending him to Niger to investigate the Italian report, unquote. Now, this article, the first of two excerpts from Wilson's new book, The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to the War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity, begins as Wilson confronts the media and political firestorm that erupted after Novak's column appeared. Well, on May 3, 2004, after making the Sunday Rites of Passage on the big television news shows, I began cutting back most of those appearances. I had answered all of the questions that were being asked and had nothing else to offer on the subject. It did not matter, as the right renewed its attack. I was a publicity seeker. The president lied, and the White House had attacked my wife. But I was a publicity seeker. Of course, if it was publicity that I was after, my campaign was a flop. Because prior to Novak's article, I was still known as the last American diplomat to have met with Saddam Hussein. Now I had become Mr. Valerie Palm, or Plame, welcome to the Dennis Thatcher Club, a husband of well-known women, a husband of a well-known woman said to me, a reference to British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's spouse. Now, the press coverage was very positive toward Valerie and me. So was the outpouring of support from across the political spectrum, from Pat Buchanan on the right to Jesse Jackson on the left. Serious people understood what had happened. It was only a small cadre of right-wing zealots in the White House itself that continued trying to spin the story and to make out of that story something that it was not. And I was particularly offended when President Bush asked about the leak on October the 7th. He claimed, "I want to know the truth," Bush said. However eager to place the responsibility upon journalists rather than shoulder that himself, he added, "You tell me, how many sources have you had that's leaked information that you've exposed or had been exposed?" And he added, "Probably none," making it clear that his question had been only a rhetorical one. Bush capped off his comments that day with a statement that infuriated me and many people whom I later heard from. He said, quote, "This is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I have no idea whether we'll find out who the leaker is, particularly because, in all due respect to your profession, you do a very good job of protecting the leakers." His lack of genuine concern stunned and disappointed me. Now, more than 4 years earlier, on April the 26th, 1999, the president's father, not only a former president but also a former director of the CIA, spoke at the ceremonial rededication of CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, which would be known henceforth as the George Bush Center for Intelligence. Referring to those who would expose clandestine officers, he said, "I have nothing but contempt and anger for those who betray the trust by exposing the name of our sources. They are, in my view, the most insidious of traitors. For his son to pretend that he was a mere onlooker in his own administration was dishonorable." Now, as of this writing in February of 2004, 2 years have passed since I traveled to Niger. Who could have imagined that journey would lead through such a maze of intrigue, so much deceit on the part of a presidential administration, and such enormous harm to my wife? It has been an existential roller coaster ride, and the wheels have not yet come to rest. Even so, there are lessons the experience has taught me, and some lessons that I believe the country can learn from this tragic war of choice that should never have been undertaken, and from the unprecedented disclosure that my wife was an undercover CIA officer. When in May of 2002 I entered the debate on how the United States should confront Iraq, I did so with a mounting sense of unease about the direction in which America was being led by the Bush administration. And I began to speak out because I believed that our armed forces would be exposed to unnecessary risk if the administration insisted on marching into war with the phony coalition then being assembled. And I also feared that our credibility and international reputation would suffer greatly, and that our position as the global superpower would be undermined, threatening much of the good that our foreign policy had achieved since World War II. Moreover, the suspect rationales being articulated by the administration. Weapons of mass destruction, ties to international terrorism with a global reach, and the possibility that Saddam might provide al-Qaeda with weapons of mass destruction just didn't, in my estimation, add up to a legitimate imminent threat or even a grave and gathering danger. Now, in 13 months, I never mentioned my trip to Niger in public appearances, in the newspaper commentaries I published, or even in private conversations, until the State Department spokesman claimed that the United States had been fooled by the forged documents. Now, the findings from the Niger mission had not altered the fact that disarmament was a legitimate goal for the international community to pursue. Even if force was required to achieve it, it was only when it became clear to me that the claim in the President's State of the Union address referred to Niger and therefore was untrue that I had no choice but to insist that my government correct the record. It was not an act of courage, as some have generously suggested, nor was it a partisan act, as critics have howled. It was a civic duty, pure and simple. If there ever are occasions when our government is justified in lying to its citizens, this was not one of them. Our democracy required that the administration be called to account. So I resisted going public for several months, however, in a futile hope that after it became apparent that there was no truth to the Niger uranium claim, and once serious questions were raised in the media, somebody in the administration would come forward and take responsibility for this falsehood. Now, I had no interest in attaching my name and face publicly to any such revelation. I had seen the harm done to bearers of bad tidings in Washington. Whistleblowers are not popular. Even after Condoleezza Rice falsely asserted on Meet the Press that maybe someone knew down in the bowels of the agency that the evidence cited in the State of the Union address was suspect, I still hesitated to set the record straight publicly, although I was becoming more determined that the lies would have to be corrected somehow at some point. Now, a few days after Rice's interview, the House and Senate Intelligence Committees announced that they were going to look into the pre-war intelligence, including the uranium claim. So I called the staff of both committees and volunteered to brief them about my trip and my findings. And I ended up briefing them separately within a few days of each other in mid-June, disclosing what I knew to the appropriate oversight body. Well, hang on, we'll be back with more with Wilson's report on the president's lies when we return. Stand by. All right, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Law Hour's Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. All of these Editorial Review programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Well, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin to this day, but public business is conducted in commercial paper, like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin versus clad coin and currency. And that's very true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there is a 7-to-1 difference in purchasing power and a 7-to-1 difference in taxes due on that paper money versus gold and silver coin. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew and they knew as a matter of law that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well, in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin, so that they could take away the people's right to property and destroy their property rights, which was done under the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberty. Now, let me teach you how to do just that, and my business school is now a compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now. Remember, the number is 417-273-4967. Remember, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, President Bush, in January of 2003, in his State of the Union message, said that Saddam Hussein was trying to acquire weapons of mass destruction in the form of uranium from Niger. That was a lie, and he knew it was a lie. See, when we deal with lying, sometimes people lie, and they believe that what they're telling you is the truth. And then there are times when people lie, and they know they're lying, and they're lying to you for a reason. Now, it's a part of brainwashing, which we're talking about on the Law Hour this week. And it works like this. Truth plus truth equals truth. Error plus error equals error. Truth plus error equals error. In order for me to deceive you, I must tell you the truth. And then I must mix the truth with error. Because if I always told you the truth, you would always know the truth. And if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. To deceive you, I have to mix the truth with a lie. And that's what President Bush did in his State of the Union message. He wanted you and I to believe that weapons of mass destruction were sitting in Iraq, that Iraq was unstable, Saddam Hussein was unstable, he was rabidly and viciously anti-American, and that he would give those weapons to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and then they would set off a nuclear weapon in New York City, which I don't doubt for a moment. If Saddam Hussein had a nuclear weapon, I think he'd have given it to Osama bin Laden, and I think they'd set it off in New York City. But he didn't have the nuclear weapon. He wasn't trying to get a nuclear weapon. And if he was, he wasn't trying to get the uranium from Niger. And President Bush sent this guy Wilson to go find out. And Wilson came back, and he did. And his wife was a CIA agent. Wilson was an ambassador. So we're not talking about Joe Sixpack driving truck, you know, from Tulsa to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We're talking about government officials who were in the know and who knew where the bear did it. And President Bush knew it when he said it, that it was a lie. And it was carefully calculated for the express purpose of convincing us that we needed to go to war with Iraq. And it worked like a shot. And that's a part of psychopolitics. Now, a week after the briefings, Wilson goes on to say, I learned from a journalist that my name was soon to be made public, and I finally decided to write the story myself and called back David Shipley at the New York Times to accept his offer of space on their editorial page. I knew that my credibility would be challenged the moment I went public, and I made preparations to defend it. I was not going to let the rabid ankle biters of the right deny me a voice in the debate or impugn my integrity. I had earned the right to be heard, the same right enjoyed by other responsible citizens, and I spoke out confident in the belief that our democracy remains strong precisely because we have a long and proud tradition of citizens challenging our government when it lies to the people. However, for all of the insults that I knew I would suffer, I never expected the White House itself to do anything like what it did. They came after my wife. Now, the disclosure of her identity was unprecedented, and the grand jury will decide if it was a criminal act. Whether convictions are obtained or not, it was unquestionably beneath the standards of conduct that we have every right to demand from our public servants. But in their attacks on us, the administration was firing at the wrong targets. I had not put the 16 words in the president's mouth. Somebody on his staff wrote that into his State of the Union message, and that's where he should have been taking aim. Valerie had not done anything wrong, and when somebody leaked the fact that she was an undercover CIA agent, thereby putting a national security asset out of commission at a time of war, the president should have demanded swift action to remove the offender from his post. Yet, as in the case of those 16 words, the president once again demonstrated more loyalty to his staff than they had shown to him. To this day, no one at the White House has apologized for this unwarranted attack on Valerie and me, and to this day, the person who leaked her name evidently remains in a position where he enjoys the trust of President Bush. Nothing has ever been done about it. So an example of the administration's shifting rationales for the war is evident in the varying importance that officials placed on the allegation that Iraq had purchased uranium or tried to purchase uranium from Niger. In sharp contrast to the president's dire warnings in his September 2002 speech to the United Nations, in which he stated, quote, should Iraq acquire fissionable material, it would be able to build a nuclear weapon within a year, and the subsequent charge that Iraq was actively seeking to purchase uranium from Africa, Condoleezza Rice tried to downplay the importance of the Niger allegation after it came out that it was false. It is ludicrous to suggest that the President of the United States went to war on the question of whether Saddam Hussein sought uranium from Africa, Dr. Rice said on Fox News Sunday on July 13, 2003. This was part of a very broad case that the President laid out in the State of the Union and other places. But the Niger fabrication was the only allegation of an Iraqi attempt to secure uranium that the administration ever put forward to substantiate the president's charge. So then, why should we believe that it was to suggest it's ludicrous? Why would we contend, or why would we believe that it's ludicrous to suggest that the President of the United States went to war on the question of whether Saddam Hussein sought uranium from Africa? Well, that's exactly what he did, so why is it ludicrous? It's the truth. I watched the State of the Union message, and yes, it's true. The uranium allegation was just one of many allegations leveled against Saddam Hussein. But it was a lie, and he knew it was a lie when he uttered it. So there wasn't any need to do it. And it's not in character with presidents of the United States who are gifted professional liars, like Bill Clinton and Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, all presidents lie. Even Ronald Reagan lied about the Iran-Contra affair. Now, we could expect Bill Clinton to lie about Monica Lewinsky and the blue dress. I mean, after all, when you get caught doing something you weren't supposed to be doing, it's natural to lie. You know, when you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, it's natural to lie about it. I think we all understand that, don't we? Okay, but President Bush wasn't caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He came out on national television in the State of the Union message and lied to us so that he could persuade us. Brainwash is a good term. Psychopolitics is what the Russians call it. To get our approval, to get us to jump on the bandwagon, to get us all excited, jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, so that we would support him in going to war. That was the purpose of it. This president would lie when the truth would serve his purpose better. That's been my observation. Bill Clinton acted like a hillbilly in a whorehouse with a credit card while he was in office. This president lies when the truth would serve his purpose better. Now, democratization is a noble goal, and I was involved in democratizing the efforts for most of my diplomatic career. It's a long and hard road that requires institution building and a significant investment on the part of the local population in a new and different system of government that is often at odds with tradition. Now, the best description that I have heard for the process is that it is like a fine English lawn. You must seed it, you must water it, and if you want it to look really good, then you must roll it. For 600 years, it is not, you have to roll it for 600 years, period. It's not a task that comes naturally to our military, however excellent that institution is. Now, this enterprise in Iraq was always about a larger neoconservative agenda of projecting force as the means of imposing solutions. It was about shaking up the Middle East in the hope that democracy might emerge. What I had heard Charles Kruthammer call the coming ashore in Arabia, whatever one might conclude about the desirability of using our military to bring democracy to the Arab world, the fact is that we went to war without first testing the thesis in any serious national debate. Now, perhaps the most eloquent and scathing critique of the consequences of this administration's having lied about why it believed it needed to go to war, Zbigniew Brzezinski observed in an October 2003 speech that during the Cuban Missile Crisis, Secretary of State Dean Acheson offered to show French President Charles de Gaulle satellite photos of Soviet nuclear missile installations in Cuba to support President Kennedy's request for support in the event that we had to go to war. De Gaulle replied that he did not need to see the photographs, as President Kennedy had given his word, and his word was good. Who would now ever take an American president at his word in the way that Charles de Gaulle once did with President Kennedy? So we now find ourselves in a disastrous quagmire in a distant land, with our troops suffering fatal wounds and disabling injuries every week, and even as we employ ever greater force to subdue an increasingly disgruntled people. And just when we think the numbers of casualties may finally be starting to subside, with our uniformed commanders assuring us that the corner has been turned, that the number of insurgent attacks is at last decreasing, the very lethality of the attacks may be actually increasing. Now, as it turned out, Condoleezza Rice was actually right, if not for the reason that she meant. What the Niger allegation was unimportant, or that the Niger allegation was unimportant, because this war was never really about weapons of mass destruction. Paul Wolfowitz, in an interview with Vanity Fair, acknowledged this concept. And on, we'll be back, and I'll tell you what Wolfowitz had to say about the weapons of mass destruction. We were lied to, and Wolfowitz told us that they lied. Hang on, we'll be right back. All right, we're back for the closer. You're listening to the Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network as an educational service in the public interest. Your support of Truth Radio and of our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us. So for more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to my website. It's truthradio.com. That's truthradio.com. Now, Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization. We're established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution, so donations are not tax-deductible. And if they were tax-deductible, then we wouldn't be free to tell the truth. We would be saddled and ridden by the FCC or the Securities and Exchange Commission or the FCC or some other government agency. So instead, we rely upon the financial support that comes from you, our listening audience, to help us pay for our satellite time, internet audio streaming, and our overhead costs. And we thank you very much for that financial support. Remember, that comes through your donations that you make to Truth Radio, Post Office Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444. Again, that's Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, 93444. Now, Richard Palmquist has an offer this month that he's making. I think he told me he had 500 of those little pocket radios. I've got one. I listen to it just about every night when I go sit down with a little glass of wine and sit in my sunroom. I have a bedroom that has an outside sunroom that's glassed in on the porch. And I tune in that little radio, and I can't begin to tell you the many interesting programs and stories that you're going to pick up on the shortwave band. Now, it's got 8 spots on it. I'm assuming that is 8 shortwave bands, I'm assuming. It's got an FM and an AM band, and then as you keep sliding the sliding bar at the top, it picks up other bands, and then you tune them in. You know, it's got the tuner on the side. And it, boy, is it a fine tuner. I mean, I can tune that thing in. The other night I got Beijing, China. Remember I told you that story? I got them back again. I thought all they talked about was panda bears. No, they got an English language broadcast in Beijing, China. And it's an interesting station to listen to. There's an English language broadcast out of Moscow, Havana. Evidently, this must be their answer to Radio Free America or something on that order. I can't tell you. It's not propaganda. It's typically stories about something going on in their country. The little radio, remember now, it's AM, FM, has a clock, has an alarm, about the size of a pack of cigarettes, has earphones. They didn't send me any earphones, but you can buy those at Radio Shack. And it's digital. It's clear as a bell. And we're suggesting a $20 donation to the radio station. You can donate whatever you want. You can donate $100 or $200 or whatever. This month, now, we went over the top. And we actually, for the first time in Truth Radio history, have paid for the month's expenses. Now, I say that's a big step in the right direction, and we should all thank Richard Palmquist and the Trust for having put up the money to finance Truth Radio. The objective has always been, of course, to make Truth Radio self-sustaining, to keep it on the air. And if it isn't self-sustaining, obviously at some point in time, the people will either run out of money or get discouraged and give up and quit. The story that I'm telling you tonight is a story that you can't get through the mainstream media. I think this is a story that needs to be told, and Truth Radio is the network to tell it. So remember the radio. Send a donation to Richard Palmquist. That's P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, and the zip code is 93444. Now listen to this. Condoleezza Rice, remember, she's the president's national security advisor. She says, it's ludicrous to suggest that the president of the United States went to war on the question of whether Saddam Hussein sought uranium from Africa. Oh, it's not ludicrous at all. He did it. And this guy identified the State of the Union, and he used 16 words to do it. And as Mark Twain would say, you know, there are lies, then there's damn lies, and then there's statistics. Well, this is one of those damn lies. You know, it's one thing when you make a mistake and you lie because you got bad information. You read it in the Wall Street Journal, you believed it, and you reported it, and you found out later it wasn't true. That's a lie. Then there's the damn lie that Mark Twain is talking about, where you know it's a lie and you're lying because you have an ulterior motive. I want the American people to go to war, so I'm going to drop these 16 words in. Now listen to this. Paul Wolfowitz, remember, he's the Undersecretary of Defense. He's the guy right under Donald Rumsfeld. He's probably a great guy. I'm not saying that Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld have run a bad war. Our military was phenomenal. You know, to win a war like they did is something worth crowing about. Now, whether you should have gone over there to war to start with is a political question, and I'm not here to argue about should we go to war or shouldn't we go to war. I'll let you people argue about that. But to lie to us to get us to go to war, I say, that needs to be exposed. And this guy Wilson is the guy to do it. And he said Rice was actually right, if not for the reason that she meant. You see, that was the Niger allegation was unimportant. Because this war was really never about weapons of mass destruction. That was the excuse that they needed to sell us on to go to war. And Paul Wolfowitz, in an interview with Vanity Fair, acknowledged as much when he said, quote, the truth is that for reasons that have a lot to do with the U.S. government bureaucracy, we settled on the one issue that everyone could agree on, which was weapons of mass destruction as the core reason for going to war, unquote. Now, the Pentagon released its own transcript of the interview after they were unhappy with news coverage of the revelations in the published article, but the two versions do not differ on this point. The reason that we went to war was everybody could agree that weapons of mass destruction were a no-no. Now, I believe that our government knew that Saddam Hussein had already destroyed all of his weapons of mass destruction, and I mentioned to you earlier that the thing I never could understand about the Bush administration when they rolled into Baghdad, you know, they should have brought out a bunch of weapons of mass destruction. You know, they should have brought out bombs and gas. You know, all you need is barrels of sarin gas, you know, or the mix. They could have flown that over, you know, in a couple of C-5As, unloaded it, stuck it in a hole in the ground, and then after about 30 or 60 days come up, my God, look at what we've found. This Saddam Hussein had all this sarin gas and all this stuff. I never could figure out why the president didn't do that. It was a mystery to me. But now I've got the answer. You see, his dad, George Bush Sr., lost the election. George Bush Sr., you know, he had these huge popularity opinion poll surveys when he defeated Saddam in the first Gulf War. But the war occurred too early in the game, and the president's popularity diminished. Winston Churchill had the same problem. After World War II, Winston Churchill ran for election, and you would have thought the people of England would have said, well, my God, this is Winston Churchill, our champion, the guy that's led us through the war, and we're going to re-elect him. No, they turned him out, voted him out, just like they did George Bush. And the truth be known, you know, George Bush probably should have been turned out of office. I mean, George Bush Sr. That's not for me to decide. But he should not have been turned out of office for the reason that he was turned out, and that is because of the lagging or the sagging economy. You see, it was George Bush. It was George Bush Sr. who put the nation on the road to recovery. But the recovery didn't kick in early enough, and so people voted him out over the economy, and then Bill Clinton was the beneficiary of the George Bush economic revival stimulus program, and Bush, who had fought a brilliant war, the first Gulf War was another brilliant American military victory. Just look into history and show me another military victory like the first Gulf War, and the second Gulf War was even more brilliant than the first one. The fourth largest army in the world defeated in 100 hours the first time around. And this time, it took 3 weeks, and they only had 130 or 40,000 men against more than a million. I mean, it was brilliant. All right, now that we've given George Bush, you know, credit where credit's due, here's what I think they're going to do. See, they've already brought in the weapons of mass destruction. Probably from Maryland, you know, Fort Detrick, Maryland. And they've got them stashed all over Iraq. Now, just wait about another 3 or 4 months. And then about 2 months before the election, when George Bush's popularity is sagged about as low as it can get, there's going to be some weapons of mass destruction found, and then some more, and then some more, and our illustrious President George Bush is going to be vindicated. Yes, indeed, he went to war for all of the right reasons. And, you know, with a little pizzazz, maybe they can even throw in a couple of three of those Russian suitcase nuclear weapons. Remember, 35 of those suitcase nukes disappeared. And just what if, you know, just for the sake of our story here, they found half a dozen of those over there that Saddam had, maybe buried under one of his palaces. Mm-hmm. George Bush will be the champion of champions, and he'll be reelected. Well, let's see if I'm a prophet in my own time. Let's see if that actually comes to pass. All right. This is a report, remember, that came from, give this guy's name again. It's called, or this guy's name is Joseph Wilson, Joe Wilson. His wife, remember, is the guy. This was reported on the mainstream press. Wilson's wife was a CIA agent, and they got Bob Novak, syndicated columnist, to write an article about her and identify her as a CIA agent. Now, Novak, in all probability, is one of the insiders. He probably belongs to CFR, like Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw. It wouldn't be beyond me to believe that. And I would presume that was leaked for the express purpose of discrediting this guy, Wilson, who's obviously a Democrat. And so the administration now has got egg all over their face because they use weapons of mass destruction as the basis for going to war, and this guy here actually was sent over there to Niger for the express purpose of finding out. So he went over and he investigated, and he found out from the Niger government that no, they weren't selling uranium to Saddam Hussein. And he reported that, and the president liked it. So there's that story. Well, we're out of time. Good being with you, and I'm hoping to be back again tomorrow, same time, same station, right here on the Editorial Review and the Law House. Until next time, friends, bye and good night.